The following program contains heavy spoilers, deep insight, and absolutely no filters. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back. Snobs on Film. My name is Arthur. I have my usual suspects with me, Isaac Perry and Jahan. Let's get right to it. With Netflix's recent partnership with A-list talents such as Martin Scorsese, Will Smith, and some others, and the news that the company will produce 80 original films in the coming 2018. It looks like we're entering an age when going to the theater to see feature films will soon become obsolete. Our streaming services, such as Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon, even Apple's throwing its hat in the ring, are these the arbiters of individualized entertainment culture that's going to eradicate the need for cinema?
One thing I think, before we even dive in, I think is interesting to point out is that Netflix, or is key to point out, is Netflix said not that they're going to produce 80 original films, they're going to drop 80 original films.
Mm-hmm.
Not, and that's films, not including all the other original content they do as far as, you know,
television series.
Series. Which, can we even call it television-y? I mean, I guess, you know, is that term needed? That needs a revisement. But anyway, so it's not just that they're going to produce. Some of these they're going to acquire from other production companies.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll, especially, you know, some of their overseas partners, and they'll drop them in the United States, or they'll acquire them fresh from production companies, and, you know, they'll be the first ones to debut them.
You know, I think the real competitors for them are Amazon more than something like Hulu or even Apple's foray into original programming, because Amazon's got the ecosystem. I mean, Amazon's trying to build their ecosystem.
But so far, Amazon has stumbled, you know, they're, as far as their original content, because I think we can all name a Amazon show at this table, but I don't think that they're mainstream in the same way as Netflix is. But you know what? Before we even get into all this, to me, here's the big question. And I think John is probably best suited to answer this question as somebody who has recently acquired a television, someone who has, you know, consumed the majority of his film and TV on the small screen, you know, and probably, I think you have 15 or 17 inch MacBook screen. So does, in terms of cinema and in terms of film, not television, but mostly in terms of film, does size matter? You know, does it make a difference watching film on the big screen, whether we're talking about, you know, at home, or we're talking about mainly, you know, in a theater, a cinema? Does it matter to see a film on the big screen as opposed to your small screen at home?
Increasingly less, I think. But I don't think sitting at home and watching television will ever eclipse the experience of going to the movies. So when I go to the cinema, I don't necessarily go purely for the film. I go to be around people, to see a movie with certain people. It's a whole event, it's a whole thing, and you don't get that when you are at home alone and you flick on something on Netflix.
True, but you also save the, I mean, damn, $85-$90 for the experience. I mean, like, for me to go to the movies, it's a real economic question. It's also a logistical question. I'm a good $85-$90, close to 100 sometimes, with my whole family, because somebody's going to go to the concession stand and a soda pop is literally $3. Then there's parking. I haven't even gotten to parking.
You sneak it in? You don't do the sneak in thing? Like, I don't think I've ever gone to the cinema and not snuck something in.
Yeah, you could sneak a snack in, but you're not bringing pop.
Yeah, that's why I even mentioned pop.
See, they got hip to that. So the snacks are cheap. The pop is like $20.
I don't not want to ever return to the cinema. I mean, some movies, you know, there isn't a television that you can buy that's big enough to really experience something like, well, of course, Star Wars, but even something like Dunkirk, which is just like, you know, cinematic visual porn with just the majesty of the scale of it.
Mm-hmm.
It surprises me scrolling through, even the other night, just scrolling through what Netflix's menu is.
Mm-hmm.
Of the things that they provide, not just original programming, but just, you know, movies and documentaries, because I'm a documentary nut.
Right.
Just what they have.
So let's look at the landscape here. You got Netflix, who everyone knows about. So they've had their hat in this ring for a long time.
Yeah.
Hulu, who really is, you know, they've kind of made their mark as they made deals with network televisions companies.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the networks, well, I think the exception of CBS, if their show drops on terrestrial, you know, television or whatever it's called, you know, regular television, on a Monday night, you'll be able to see it on Hulu either later that night or Tuesday night, you know, or Tuesday morning or whatever. So they would, you know, people who subscribe to Hulu generally are people who are watching, you know, these kind of mainstream television shows outside of the mainstream system. So they may not even have cable. You know, they got Hulu instead.
Yeah.
But Hulu does have films. They do have feature films. But not like they haven't put that. They don't have the content that Netflix has. Then you have Amazon.
Yeah, that's why I bring up Amazon with now, the feature film game.
But Amazon, so far as the success of their original content, they've experienced some success, but nowhere near as much as they hoped. I think The Man in the High Castle and there's one I'm forgetting is probably their premier, like, you know, original content right now. They've had some success in movies, I believe.
Yeah. Well, Manchester by the Sea won
theatrical,
two Oscars.
Right. But theatrical releases, when those were released in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
So what Netflix and these other, I think what's happening now, and Apple, who's thrown their hat in the ring as well, what they're saying now is that, because Netflix has gotten some flack about not releasing some of their films in theaters. Mm-hmm. They've released some documentaries at times, but what they've got coming up with Bright, which is the Will Smith movie, that's going to be released on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Scorsese's The Irishman, which they've made a deal with him for this movie, which is going to be released in 2019. Right now, they're saying it's going to be released on Netflix and not in theaters. So they've caught some flack for not putting things in theaters. From Hollywood, from the industry itself, from critics, and from some fans. So to me, it's like, what is happening right now? What is Netflix and what are these streaming services trying to accomplish? In my opinion, they are trying to accomplish a scenario or a world where, even if the theaters are still around, they're not necessarily abolished, but a greater number of people are choosing to watch original movies when they drop at home. On Netflix or on a streaming service, as opposed to going to a theater. I think for Netflix in particular, they want to be a utility mm-hmm. in your home, just like mm-hmm. you have lights, gas, Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? They want to be a part of your life in that way. That's the only reason they're, you know, that can explain them spending $8 billion next year Agreed. On original content.
Agreed. And they're also platform agnostic.
What does that mean?
Platform agnostic. It means that Netflix, you can watch Netflix on a smart television. You can watch Netflix on an Android phone, an iOS device, a computer.
And they've been very good about, and I give them credit for this, about not focusing on one particular platform, to your point. Because a lot of streaming services or apps right. in particular, okay. they'll focus on one, you know, and okay. then you go back to your laptop and try to, and it's off, the interface is just jacked up.
Mm-hmm.
You can watch Netflix anywhere and it's a good experience.
And they put a lot of yeah, they money put a lot into of their infrastructure. Into
it, yeah.
But, you know, and even to the criticism from critics about Netflix not releasing in theaters, what's the criticism? Is it the criticism that it's bad for the cinema market, that it's bad for the theater experience? Because the theater experience, are they hurting? AMC, when you go to the movies, you're not going to a movie house. I mean, AMC theaters, Lowe's theaters, these large theater conglomerates have closed the storefront theaters. I mean, here in Chicago and downtown, Esquire Theater, that's a theater experience. Now, going to the movies is like straight up like going to the mall.
Right. So you're saying the experience in and of itself has changed. So why should we hold on to that?
The experience in and of itself has changed. So what's the real criticism of toward Netflix for not providing their original programming, particularly original films, in theaters.
To answer your question, Arthur, the pushback that you're getting is from cinephiles, for one thing, people who, you know, are like, hey, movies should be shown on a big screen. That's the best way to experience it. That's the best way to consume a movie. That's what the director had in mind when they shot the movie, the cinematographer, the editor, they had in mind that it'd be shown on this big screen first. But then also there was a, and I was looking at this, before the show, and I think I should actually read a portion of this. So there was a controversy, with Cannes Film Festival, which I think it was this year, where I think this year was the first year where streaming service movies were actually eligible for one of their top awards at Cannes. And there was a lot of pushback. There's a lot of controversy surrounding that from theater owners and theater groups were like, look, that movie wasn't available in theaters. And specifically, I think it wasn't available in French theaters. There's two movies, I think, that Netflix had that offered up for this award. One of them was a drama. The other one was something starring Dustin Hoffman and Adam Sandler. The other one was a fantasy epic starring Tilda Swinton. So both of these movies were eligible, and there was just a lot of noise from French theater owners. So as a result of this, Cannes has introduced a new rule that says the new rule says that any film that wishes to compete in competition at Cannes will have to commit itself to being distributed in French movie theaters. This new measure will apply from the 2018 edition of the festival onwards. So I think what's happening is it's kind of like a changing of the guard is what's going on right now, and kind of a shift in not only how we consume movies, but what is the definition of a movie? Is it what it is or where it's shown? Is it still a movie if it's shown on television first or on your iPod or your iPhone first instead of in a theater? And I think Netflix's position is that, we are going to produce original feature films. Hulu is going to want to get in this game. Amazon is already producing original films. It doesn't matter where they're shown first. It's up to the consumer. And again, I think that theater owners and the Hollywood industry, which is similar to how the music industry had its own structure and its own infrastructure set up. And when that became threatened, you saw what happened, how people reacted. Hollywood has an infrastructure set up. It's dependent upon certain checks and balances. This person gets paid for this. This institution gets paid for this. This is how we move a movie from script onto the final phase. That's getting challenged right now. And I don't think, again, this is the result of the technology that we have access to right now. I don't know how this is going to play out, but the question is, is it going to play out for the consumer's benefit ultimately, or is it going to play out for the organizations and the corporations benefit?
Well, isn't it that same both and scenario where as long as the consumer is happy to receive the content or where they're voting with their wallets, that they are willing to have subscriptions, to maintain subscriptions to view this content, then it's fine?
I think the consumers are always going to want the best of both worlds. In other words, we want the choice to be able to go see this movie in a theater, but then go see these other movies, watch them at home. But the problem with that is that, again, if theaters aren't, you know, getting the number of customers in order to keep their doors open, they can't keep their doors open. And so that's why, to your point, why we've seen theaters shuttered over the years. I think entertainment in and of itself, I think, is becoming more and more individualized. I don't think people view the movie going experience the way they used to view it. And I think the temptation just to sit at home and click a button and have a movie put up on your screen within a few seconds, that's just much greater and much more cost efficient than going to the theater. To the point now where there's actually certain movies, I know I do this, and I'm sure other people do as well. There's movies that come out and I'm thinking, I'll just wait for, a couple of months and I'll watch that at home. That's not worth me going to the theater.
That, I think, is maybe the big issue here, that in the 60s, 70s, I mean, I wasn't alive at that point to watch the movies, but there was such a high frequency of quality films, like back-to-back landmark joints coming out. I could see myself wanting to go to the cinema almost every weekend. Do you think this is a result of ultimately a lower quality in the art form you just said, I'll wait for that on Netflix. That's not good enough for me to spend my $20 or $30 or $50 on.
Yeah, I think for me, I think that it's a not necessarily a reflection of the quality of the films that actually reach the theater. My worry is that with Netflix saying, hey, we're going to drop 80 original films in 2018, how many of those films are going to be good? How many of those films are going to be of a good quality?
Before we get into that, would your decision to sit at home and watch a movie on Netflix have been different in the blockbuster age? Would you have seen that same film and said to yourself, I'll wait for the video for that one? Or is there something about Netflix that makes you more inclined to not go to the cinema?
That's an interesting question. I think that if I look back at the, but it's kind of different though, Jay, because those films that were dropping in the 80s appealed to me, not just because of their quality, but because of my age, you know, of the those action, those 80s action films. Yeah. I was running at the theater to see those. So if I were that same age now and those, you know, we had the, you know, the Die Hards and the Lethal Weapons and the Predator and all that type stuff dropping now. Yeah, I probably would still go to the theater for that. For the same reason I went to see Thor a couple weeks ago, because I couldn't wait.
Right.
You know, I didn't want to wait. You know, I was interested in that. But I think what the streaming services do now, they give you the option for those films that maybe back in the day you would go, because let's be honest, the movies used to be kind of like a fallback as well. It wasn't like we were always going to the movies for some great experience. Sometimes you just went to the movies because you had nothing else to do, you know, or it's an easy date. It's just whatever. Like, you know, what you doing? Let's go
and
to the
movies. And it was priced back then where that was an option. It was an option to have it as a fallback.
Right. So now I think, you know, now what we have is that option, instead of just going to the theater just to go to the theater, now I can just pull it up on my television and it's even cheaper. But the flip side is that you can't, in terms of dating, you can't be like, hey, let's hang out at my crib all the time. It's like, nah, you want to go somewhere and do something. So in that aspect, I guess the movies still have some legs there. But to answer your question, no, I think that if that quality of those type of films were still coming out, if we were in that heyday, yeah, I'd still be running to the theater. Just like, I think now though, the MCU movies have replaced those action movies. There's just not as many of them. There's only three or four MCU movies a year. Then you have the other superhero movies, whether it's the Fox movies or the Warner Brothers films. So I think those are replaced, but they still aren't of that quality. You know, they aren't up there as far as like a lot of those classic 80s action films.
What kind of studio are Netflix trying to be? Are they trying to be a Paramount, a Warner's, a 20th Century Fox? Or are they trying to be an independent studio like Annapurna that allow their directors and writers greater creative control? Because if that's the case, you may actually see Netflix as the home for quality. I think they got what's coming out in most multiplexes and malls.
But I could see them, if they follow the first trail that you said, like to become a Paramount or one of the big studios, if that's the model, they can still do quality films, because those studios do quality. You don't have to just be an indie to do quality films.
Sure.
But I get your point. But you know what I'm trying to say. Yeah, because my
movies which aren't directed solely to be a blockbuster.
Right. If they, I'm with you 100%, because I don't want to see them or Hulu or Amazon or whoever become an assembly line movie theater in a movie studio. In other words, don't just, you said you're going to drop 80 films. But they kind of are. If you look at some of the Netflix films, because listen, I don't expect to be interested in all 80 films that Netflix drops next year. Obviously, these are going to be films across the array. They're going to need to be original in the sense that Netflix is either going to produce them or acquire them, right. And somebody else are going to acquire them. Somebody else is going to produce them. So my thing though is that I know I'm not going to be interested in all of them, but they should all be able, I want them to reach for a certain quality, even if they don't always. So far, if you look a lot of the original movies on Netflix, they ain't good. They're not reaching. You know, they're not of that quality. And so that's the question. I'm with Jahan. I'm like, okay, how are you trying to flip this script? And to me, one of the best examples they could follow is look at how HBO flipped the television script. When they decided to start doing original television, they didn't look at it like, okay, we're just going to assembly line and just kick out a bunch of stuff. even though they do have a lot of content. If you ever go to HBO's it's amazing how many television shows, original television shows they've done, series they've done. But really, they changed the game. They ushered in this age of golden television that we're living in because of the quality of the shows that they produced.
Right.
And so I would like to see the streaming services, especially because they have so much money behind them. Apple is going to drop $1 billion on this. They're just getting started. So they have so much money. I would like to see them reach for that level of artistic, you know, accomplishment instead of settling, saying, okay, we're just going to drop a bunch of movies.
Yeah. Well, I see that $8 billion investment that Netflix is willing to make for that purpose, to the purpose of getting their weight up in original film, and
$8 billion is for their entire content. That's not just for a film. That's for all of their original content. So that includes their television, their series.
Okay, I mean, fair enough. They have original television, not locked, but they're a horse in the race.
Oh, with absolutely,
HBO, yeah. Unquestionably. Mm-hmm. But also, they need to hedge their bets in preparation for Disney leaving Netflix and pulling all of their properties away from Netflix, which generates revenue for Netflix as a distribution model, so that Disney can now be the exclusive distributor of Pixar film, all of their properties, Pixar films, Star Wars films, Disney or classics.
That brings about an interesting point, because recent developments as we record this, Disney is the front runner right now in talks to buy 20th Century Fox.
Mm-hmm.
By the time this airs, I'm sure that'll have been worked out. They will have bought them or not have bought them. So mm-hmm. if that happens, then 20th Century Fox, I think, is the main shareholder in Hulu. So now if Netflix has main control over Hulu, Disney already is a partner, I think, in the whole Hulu venture. But if they acquire 20th Century Fox and gives them a large share of Hulu, now you've got Disney saying, maybe we don't have to do our own subscription service, streaming service. Our subscription streaming service will be Hulu. So then they put their money behind Hulu. So now that raises stakes for everybody, you know, to your point. So the money is there, you know, the money is there. To Jahan's point, though, is how is this going to play out for us, the consumer? From a monetary standpoint, it gives us the option, I think, of saying, you know what, F cable. Done with cable completely.
Right.
Subscribe to Netflix, subscribe to Hulu, Amazon. That comes out to what, like $50 a month maybe? I'm good. You know, that's better than what you're paying for cable. I don't care. Especially if you're living in Chicago, New York, LA, wherever.
Mm-hmm.
That's better for you as a consumer. So is that where we're headed? Is that what's going to happen? You know, because if you can get your original TV and your original films at home on these streaming services, you can cut out cable and you may never have to leave your house.
Yeah, but I don't think cable companies want to get left out. I mean, chief among them, Comcast, which owns NBC, mm-hmm. Universal. So Comcast saying, okay, well, if people are cutting the cable, then that's fine. We can't really offer HBO as a package with our service as an attractor. Let's just put resources into our internet service and then own studios that provide the content that third parties will stream through our pipe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I don't think they're going to want to be left out of the game. It could very well be that cable companies are astute enough to think about how flexible they can become and shift presence.
Yeah, the cable companies know that you're always going to need their broadband service. You know, no matter what you're doing, you're going to need their broadband service, which is why those prices have increased over the years. And I'm looking at it now. Hulu, the parent companies for Hulu include Comcast,
mm-hmm.
20th Century Fox, Disney, and Time Warner. So I don't know if Disney buys 20th Century Fox. I don't know how that plays out as far as the percentages there. You know, does Comcast get kicked out? You know, what happens there?
Well, it sounds like Disney's going to take their ball and go home with their streaming service, because they have out of all everybody that you just mentioned, Disney has the biggest name recognition.
Mm.
They've got the biggest brand recognition and brand loyalty, frankly, than any of them put together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but again, I question, then that brings to mind, okay, from a consumer standpoint, are we looking at too much monopoly here? You know, is there a monopolization going on, not just with content, but with also who I have the ability to subscribe to? You know, where does Apple, when Apple jumps in this ring, what they producing? You know what I'm saying? It's right. Like, at some point, are we going to get is this going to be a saturated thing? Is it going to be too many choices?
Well, that takes me back to ecosystem.
Even just in television at the moment, there's too many choices. Like 20 years ago, half the stuff we would discuss, we would have all seen it, whether it's a TV show or a movie. Now we are completely saturated with product, and it looks like we're only going to be more saturated with the more these guys ramp up their own internal production. But I got to push back a little bit on the quality of Netflix movies. I've only just started watching stuff on there, but I've seen 5 of their original films, and I really, really liked all 5. Our Souls at Night, I loved it. Wheel Man, I really liked that. That was my favorite out of all of them.
That one I've heard of. That was the... I heard someone reference that in reference to Baby Driver.
It's way better than
Baby Driver. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They referenced it as better than Baby Driver.
Actually, a much better comparison to Wheel Man is Drive.
With Ryan Gosling?
Correct. Mm-hmm. First They Killed My Father, which is fantastic.
Is that the Angelina Jolie joint? Yeah, that film, I think they've won an award for, or they were in talks to win an award for.
Then War Machine with Brad Pitt. It's certainly not better or worse than The Men Who Stare at Goats or films of that nature. Mm-hmm. If you look at stuff like that, I'm sure they've got some clunkers, but if you look at stuff like that, if you look at everything that Netflix is putting out on the television side, like you said, it's all quite strong, or the balance is strength. It looks like their betting average is pretty high at the moment.
Yeah, but those are 5 films, and I think, I don't know how many they released in 2007. No, they released...
So your biggest worry, Isaac, is the quality of the content.
Yeah, they released 50 films in 2017.
Quality has never been... Hollywood puts out I don't know how many movies in a year, but I mean, how many of those are actual quality films?
Quality is not my biggest concern. To be honest, I'm not concerned about any of this because none of this money is hitting my pocket. But for what's going to happen in the future, I'm not really concerned about it. Although I will say I do have a slight concern about the maintaining or the maintenance of the theater experience.
So you're worried that that's going to disappear.
Yeah, and I'm be honest, I'm one of those people who I actually only really go to the movies when I know it's going to be half empty. Like, I don't like being around I don't like crowds. Mm-hmm. I don't like strangers sitting right next to me. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that whole group experience really ain't my thing. Except if I'm with, like, you know, people I know. You know what I'm saying?
Up and it's an event.
Right, and it's an event. But at the same time, the experience of seeing a movie on a big screen, of that sound system, you know, of that darkened theater, that just, you know, the popcorn, that I want to see that live on. I would hate to see that go away. Not just for me, but for everyone. I'm not necessarily worried about it because I feel like Jahan feels, I don't think that's going to go away. I think this is one of those human things like they did, you know, we saw this in the book industry, you know, 10, 15 years ago, this is the end of print. You know, 5 years later when print was still around, this is the end of print. Right. Then 5 years, people prove that humans like to touch things. They like to hold things. You know, bookstores are now growing again. You know,
to leave their houses.
Right. They like to leave their houses. Yeah, yeah. Some of them, not a lot of Americans, but most of them, you know, other people like to leave their houses. But yeah, human beings have shown time and time again that there are certain tactile experiences that we enjoy. And so this idea of a future where we're all kind of like, you know, living in our homes and never speaking or seeing another human. Even though a lot of science points to that, I just don't think it's going to happen. So I'm not necessarily worried as so much as I am like, I'm looking at what's happening around right now with Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, and these other streaming services. And it's very interesting to me to see them gear up for this war that they're about to have.
You're right, because while there may not be, while it may not have stopped, streaming services have definitely acquired some of the experiential ground and some of the event-based ground that cinemas have traditionally had. Like, for example, date night. You used to have date night taking someone to the movies. Mm-hmm. Now you have Netflix and chill. It's a whole thing, right?
Which ain't
people
really...
actually bear people actually base an experience around. It depends what type of experience we're talking about.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's not a good first, I don't even know you, I'm not coming over your house. I think it was in Insecure.
No. But
remember in
Insecure,
they kind of parodied it. They did a joke about that. It's like, yeah, but, Netflix and chill. Yeah, whatever.
But what I'm saying is...
It's a thing. I get you.
It's a thing. Whether that happens on the first day or whether... Whatever, whether those people would still be going to the movies at that stage in their relationship or whatever it is that they have, it's expanding into culture more than that.
But to me, what's really, it's going to be interesting, you know, I mentioned Bright earlier, the Will Smith feature film. It's going to be interesting to see how that's received, how that plays out. This is a big budget film. This is a $90 million film. Mm-hmm. That's a big budget film. Directed by David Ayer. I think he did Suicide Squad and some other films, written by Max Landis. And so it's going to premiere on Netflix. They're not putting it in a theater.
And it looks like a typical Will Smith film.
It looks like a typical Will Smith film, which can be good or bad in terms of box mm-hmm. office. If it's mm-hmm. good, typical, that means you're going to make a lot of bank in terms of viewership. But again, this box office is on Netflix is predicated on subscribers. So it's like, okay, are people, you maintain subscribers by putting films like this on your streaming service. You also gain subscribers by putting films like this on your streaming service. So how this plays out and the success or the failure of this $90 million flick, and the fact that they were able to announce that one of the legendary directors of all time, Martin Scorsese, is partnering with them to do a film, an original film starring... I believe it's starring Robert De Niro and Al Pacino. Both of these movies are blockbusters. So, like I said, Will Smith is $90 million flick. The Irishman right now, I just looked it up, $125 million. So, you know, these are, mm-hmm. you know, when if you would have said, you know, 10 years ago when people were ordering Netflix through the mail that, you know, yeah, pretty soon they're going to be dropping and producing movies and on $100 million budgets. That seems very far-fetched, you know.
Now, I've got something that you'll both be interested in that you may not have heard of. Steven Soderbergh released an app, iOS exclusive, called Mosaic. He put it together with a former Universal producer. HBO has put some money into it as well. It had a $20 million budget. It's a film. It's a 7-part miniseries. It stars Sharon Stone. And within the context of the app, it's very similar to the old Choose Your Own Adventure stories.
Wow.
Right? Where it centers around a murder and you choose a character in which you assume their point of view throughout the story. Now, in first quarter of 2018, as part of the deal with HBO, who, by the way, they had shopped this project to a few studios. HBO was the one that they went with, but it was because HBO wouldn't let them out of the room before they had a deal. Soderbergh is going to recut the 7 hours as a linear miniseries to be aired on HBO. So now you've got Academy Award winning, super cred director Soderbergh, who is affluent in multiple genres of film, Traffic, Ocean's 11, 12, and 13, et cetera, right? Doing an app. And then you've got a television production based on the storyline of the app. So there's this amalgamation of all these different companies and organizations coming together to create something that's, you know, truly unique.
Mm-hmm. All this is Apple's fault. This is Apple's fault. Dude, go back to the conversations you and I had when... Even before the iPhone, mm-hmm. go back to when it first became possible to watch video on the iPod. Remember that?
Yes. Yes.
So now you could actually download mm-hmm. movies mm-hmm. and television and watch it on your iPod.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then that was a spark. That was like the little spark that ignited something.
Yeah, but we asked for that.
I'm saying
for
though.
Videotape that was eaten by a VCR.
Yeah, but we would have been cool with that. But when the iPhone dropped,
mm-hmm.
and this whole individualized entertainment content thing happened where everybody was carrying around a supercomputer in their pocket And then Samsung and all these other, you know, Nokia, Motor, everybody had, you know, started these, the smartphone revolution.
Right.
All of a sudden you had all these avenues of content that need, all these avenues that needed content.
Yes.
Now I think what we're seeing is the result of that need. We're seeing the, we're seeing these companies like HBO looking at things and saying, how can we get content out of that? Because mm-hmm. we got all these avenues, you know what I'm saying? So, okay, oh, boom, it's the app. How do we make that into a series? Then we can stream that joint over our HBO Go app.
Yeah, but I mean, don't.
I'm not mad at it. I'm just saying,
I'm
saying that.
I'm not suggesting that you are.
This is the genesis. That was the genesis of what we're seeing happen right now.
And,
right?
I, and I do. I the take
doors,
your argument.
The doors were open a long time ago, but nobody, we weren't able to, you know, there was nothing walking through those doors. Now, all of a sudden, we're seeing these companies create these things, these content, so we can start filling up all these avenues. Because there's so many ways to consume right. content right
studios
now.
Studios don't, film and television studios don't want to go the way of the record industry. You understand what I'm saying? Apple's fault or not. And I get it. I 1,000% get it. Studios, record labels stood in the way of artists being able to get their product out. So what happened? Well, through the internet, through compression, artists got out. You know, Issa Rae got put on. We just got through talking about Insecure. She got put on through YouTube.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So studios don't want to get in the, they don't want to fall the way of the record recording industry.
Which is very smart.
These different kinds of avenues, though, they create, you're a writer.
I am.
Would you be, doesn't it excite you? Wouldn't it excite you to have a project, to have an opportunity to write a project specifically for the small screen or for your Apple TV?
Listen, for content creators, whether you're a writer, a photographer, a cinematographer, whatever you are, if you're creating content, the more avenues for content is good for you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, whether it's you're producing or you're creating something for a specific avenue, or you're creating like Soderbergh, you're creating something and then it can go in all these other different directions. Mm-hmm. That's more revenue for him. My question, though, is that, again, just to bring this back full circle, all these different avenues now, what does this do to the theater? Let me ask you a question.
Does the aesthetic suffer? That's what you're going with?
Let me ask you a question. If The Last Jedi mm-hmm. was available on Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon the same day that it drops in the theater, how many people are going to go to the theater?
I'll tell you what I think would happen.
Some people are going to go, but nowhere near. And I'm telling you, mm-hmm. look at all the revenue that comes to the movie industry
right.
from people going to the theater and right. paying ticket prices and paying popcorn and parking and all yeah. those other things.
Yeah.
That gets dwindled. That gets erased.
So I agree with you. I think the impact will be the impact all the same. But I don't think that the reason for the impact will be necessarily intentional. I don't think a lot of people would say, oh, I can watch The Last Jedi at home. Cool. I think for an event movie like that, most people will want to see it in the cinema, but maybe they can't get tickets. Maybe they see it once in the cinema, they're going to go and see it again in the cinema, but then they think, you know what? I'll check it out on Netflix for my second visit mm-hmm. instead of paying twice for it. That will be what happens, this sort of gentle erosion, because right now everybody wants something immediate. Everyone wants to be part of the discussion from day one. There's this whole fear of missing out that, you know, they even have an acronym for it, FOMO. I think that's where you will start to see some erosion in cinema attendees and theater goers versus people watching it at home.
I also think it's a play to ultimately regulate some of this, you know, embracing the technology to stay relevant and flexible, which is what my point was about the studios not wanting to go the way of the record companies, but also ultimately being able to control the consumer pipeline. The FCC voting down net neutrality is a sign of something like that. This would be an interesting conversation to take back up in a calendar year to see how 2018 has played out. You're going to see the effects of the FCC's vote on net neutrality. You're going to see how some of these productions pan out, what kind of revenue was generated, how people consumed it, you know, what was a hit, what was a miss. Does Martin Scorsese and, you know, a Robert De Niro, Al Pacino product is that relevant anymore? Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody may not care about that.
Yeah, the hit or miss, just in that context, you're looking at right now, that's largely judged on first weekend box office. Mm-hmm. But if I know something is coming out on Netflix, even if it's something I'm hyped about, I may not get to it for the week or so because it's like I know it's sitting there waiting on me and I can do it whenever I want to. So right. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, so that just how are they going to judge hit or miss now? You know, if this is the future, again, to your point. Well,
I think they will be able to judge that because look at Twitter. The day Stranger Things 2 drops or the day House of Cards drops, it's a hashtag straight away.
Mm-hmm. And spoiler alert city too, but yeah.
Right, exactly. And there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people who have watched every single episode mm-hmm. within a weekend. Again, because I think of this fear of missing out. Again, because of this zeitgeist obsession that so many people have. They need to belong to the conversation. And that water cooler conversation, it used to have a time limit. It used to be Monday morning. Now it's almost immediate.
I mean, this is slightly out of order, but Disney launches their streaming service. The Han Solo movie comes out. And digitally, Disney locks down an exclusive to distribute that so that you can only watch it on their streaming service. Cinema 2.
And not in the cinema.
Well, no. Cinema 2, because it's too big of a property. But I'm saying Apple's not going to have it. Amazon's not going to have it.
I can see that.
You see what I mean?
Yeah,
definitely going
to
happen.
And that becomes a driver for traffic. And that becomes a subscription driver for them.
Just
these
like
movies
the
are
Will
not
Smith
held hostage at the home
just
market.
Just like House of Cards is not available on any other streaming service. Yeah.
Yeah, I think what you just said, though, is interesting, Arthur. You said it's too big of a property not to be in the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
How long does that last, though? Are we going to be still saying that 5 years from now? You know what I'm saying? That's the question. Is Star Wars episode...
I think that's a socioeconomic question. Let's take the new Apple TV product, the new Apple TV 4K. And there's a Google Chromecast 4K, and there'll probably, if not already, be an Amazon Fire 4K, right?
Mm-hmm.
That means you got to buy a 4K television, which, Jahan, I don't know if you did or didn't. Did you end up buying a 4K?
I did.
As 4K televisions become more, let's say, mainstream, I think that's where you'll really see the erosion. Because right now, you can only get that full-on theatrical experience at a theater because your TV doesn't support that kind of fidelity.
I got to be
honest
with
you,
though.
Or your cable subscription for that matter, because 4K streaming that stuff through is not, there's no joke.
I got to be honest. I spent like 45 minutes flicking back, forth. I can't tell the difference. Honestly, I can't tell the difference. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell the difference.
This may not be your case, but sometimes the app will regulate what gets delivered to you based on the quality of what can get delivered to you. So
based on my internet.
Exactly.
Facility.
Exactly. Even though you've selected, even though you've selected the top tier.
Yeah.
Netflix isn't able to deliver that to you.
Yeah.
So it'll dumb it down and give you the next best thing.
That's a good point. I mean, I've got a superb internet.
That may not be your experience, but that is something that apps will do.
But maybe the interesting thing is, they're sort of selling this stuff which actually isn't market ready.
Thank you. That's the big point that I think we need to get to is that with all this shit that they're doing, the actual, let's step back like five steps. Let's take a big step back.
Right.
The actual process of streaming.
That's right.
Needs to get better. If you're listening, anyone who is involved in any of this type of shit. Please, that you can, when you go to Best Buy and look at the, you know, try to buy your modems and your routers and whatever. Mm-hmm. First of all, you need a degree to, you know, to really do all that stuff. And then it's funny because sometimes, like I've done a lot of research on that stuff, so I, you know, I feel like when I go in there, I'm pretty confident. But if I have any questions, it's funny. You got to ask the right person because a lot of times you'll ask, they have no idea.
They have no idea.
They don't know.
Yeah,
and it's
because
like,
they haven't gone down the rabbit hole.
Wow. And it's like, how you working it? But anyway, I digress. My main point though is that Apple, Amazon, Netflix, all, you know, great that you're doing all this stuff and content and you're working on your interface. Who are we going to get on this stream on the Wi-Fi issue. You know what I'm saying?
That's infrastructure.
It's like they
need to get somebody on the Wi-Fi because it shouldn't be this complicated.
That's the telecommunications company.
To get great right. Wi-Fi. Right. I don't want no drops.
And see, that's why net neutrality is such a big issue. That's why it's so important. What the FCC is saying now is that it's okay for AT&T to prioritize Netflix's streams over Hulu as they see fit.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Because you're paying more.
Because you're rolling with this team.
Mm-hmm. So it's basically it's giving them permission to get bullshit service if they want.
That's right.
For and then if you want this service, you got to pay more.
In the name of consumer choice. That's right.
That's BS. See, if you are going to, because basically Wi-Fi is a utility in most people's home, not in everybody's, because there's still large swaths of impoverished
that's
parts of
America. That's what net neutrality is about.
That
the
don't
FCC
have
is
access
now saying
to Wi-Fi.
The Obama administration was like, yeah, Wi-Fi is a utility.
Right. And it should be,
regulated
should be
as such.
That. Right.
Now,
right. If I turn on the lights in your house and I turn on the lights in my house,
and
that
my bulbs
be,
are brighter.
That shouldn't be a big difference in between
right.
what we're doing
that's
over here.
Right,
so,
right.
Real talk. I have a nice router, a very nice router. I have a very nice modem. You know what I'm saying? And I get, you know, my Wi-Fi is pretty good, but still. Is still whenever you see that little wheel pop up on your television, you get pissed. You like, what? What is this? Like, I'm paying all this money. Uh-huh. I bought these things. Mm-hmm. Why did this? Why? What's with the freeze? You know, why is Netflix frozen?
Right. You
why do
to,
I got
to
reboot? You know,
you had to tell me to calm down when I was
right. John,
was
like, yeah, because Jay,
what's wrong with the screen?
Right. Jay just got like 21st century Wi-Fi. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was in London, I'm like, I'm standing in the living room looking at this television. I think it froze something. John is like ready to go ballistic. He's like, what the hell? He's about to call the cable company. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, dude, just reboot it. You know, reboot it. It happens all the time. But it shouldn't be that way. You know, and especially what worries me is that, okay, they're rolling out all this content, higher and higher resolutions, not just visual, but the sound. You know, the biggest difference I've ever seen was when Blu-ray, you know, Blu-ray became the thing, and I finally bought a Blu-ray player. The sound quality is what really, you know, made me like, okay, I'm always down with Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. Not just the visual, great, but that sound quality, nothing is better than Blu-ray. All that compressed shit you listening to on Netflix and everything, trust me, go get a Blu-ray of that same movie or that same TV series, put that joint in, it's a completely different experience than it is through the streaming services. So all of these advents they're making and the progress they're making in content, it worries me because the technology to me is not being honed. It's being created, but it's not being perfected.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, can y'all spend a few minutes doing that as opposed to telling me you're putting $8 billion in content? Can we take a billion of that and put it into making Wi-Fi better in everybody's crib?
Right. Now you get it.
let me ask you one final question. Do you think we will ever see a Netflix cinema?
No.
You mean a theater that is owned by Netflix, the actual physical place?
A physical theater owned by Netflix that only shows Netflix
maybe
content.
That's a question. Sponsored by, and they stream. They
Arthur, I can't
video?
Say that because you know why? Amazon, 10
that's
years ago,
saying.
The revolution, they're going to put bookstores out of business. Now Amazon
that's
has physical Amazon stores.
That's what I'm
There's
saying.
There's one up on Southport. There's two in Chicago, I think. So it's like... you know, that's an excellent question. It depends. To answer your question, Jay, I think it depends upon what happens.
I think there's a difference with the Amazon example because if you purchase a product on Amazon in the store, you're not necessarily taking money away from Amazon, the company. You're giving the same amount of money because there's no subscription. In each case, you purchase individual items. So whether you buy your pair of sneakers in the store physically or whether you buy it online, they get the same amount of money. With Netflix, if you see the movie in Netflix's theater, that then actually removes your need to perhaps subscribe. Unless Netflix come up with the genius idea of adding a different tiered subscription to the service.
Right, and then you can just walk into the theater.
You can just walk in with the top grade. You can see everything on the TV and you can walk into the theater.
Yeah, because Jay, if they have a theater, they're not going to have all their television.
And Netflix, if you do that shit, bro, I want mine.
Right. Sure. But right. I'm going to sound like a broken 0.5%.
I want it.
I'm going to sound like a broken record, but I'm telling you, this is all about ecosystem. The reason why Netflix wouldn't do anything like that is because there's no added value to them to take on the overhead of physical buildings and rent and employees and salaries and all this other bullshit. Because there's no ecosystem to support you taking that home. Amazon has a horse in the race. They got Echoes and shit like that, right? Apple definitely has a horse in that race for the same reasons. Microsoft, Google, that's why they're becoming a hardware company at this point, because they're trying to do it at both ends, on the content end. And that's what we really haven't heard from Google on a content end of it. But I'm saying Netflix, they don't need that, because your television is your theater. John's point is that
what if, just like with the Amazon example, what if the consumer shows Netflix, we still want to go to the theater.
Thank you.
And if that happens, then Netflix will invest in it, because look, you go see one movie, you done paid your Netflix. Netflix is only $10.99 a month.
Then maybe Netflix invests in AMC or invests in Lowe's or some small theater chain or something like that. But they're not going to name brand that shit.
Why not? Profit trumps ecosystem every single time.
Trumps everything.
And if Netflix do the financial analysis, which they will, to see bang for buck, budget for box office, are these movies making the same that they would if they were on in the theaters? They may make a different decision.
Yeah, and also Arthur, remember, Netflix is a brand. So they could it'd be difficult, but if they get the right people, they could do it right. Take their brand from that television screen and put it into a physical structure. And motherfuckers will get hyped about that, because people align themselves with Netflix. Just like you said, it's the Kleenex now. So Amazon, to me, really hasn't done that well. You know, they got their little stores or whatever, but it's cool. But it's not like there's some type of Amazon experience you're getting. But Netflix has shown to kind of be the arbiter of cool right now, as far as like content, you know, consumption. It's cool to say you Netflix and chill. That's cool. So if they can take that and put it in the physical structure, if necessary, because that's the key component. If it's not necessary, they ain't doing it. But if, like John said, if the numbers are telling them, look, people still want to go to the theater and we can make buck, you know, if we do this, I could see them doing that and actually winning there. And, you know, it's not like they roll out 1,000 theaters. They would do it in large markets first, you know, a theater in New York, a theater in Chicago, a theater in L.A. Boom. Let's see how this rolls. Theater in London. And, you know, they could tie it to their subscriptions. It's actually a dope idea. Can I get a part? If they do it, can I get
given
a piece of that?
Given that you're supporting me now and that you buy into the vision, I'll give you a piece.
Can I get 25%?
I'll give you a piece.
Arthur's not getting no money. I want it all. Yo, let me make a call on the
cellular. I'm telling you, taking care of business on the regular. Snubs on Phil. My name is Arthur, joined by Isaac and Jahan. We can be found online at snobsonfilm.com. All of the shows stream from there. Isaac Perry, where you live online?
You can find me at Isaac Perry on Twitter and IG. And to learn more about me, you can go to isaacperry.com.
Jahan, first of his name.
You can find me where the streets have no name.
I'm open for online conversation on Twitter at @ArrThurr. We'll see you next show.
Peace.
Some nonsense that's totally distracting, reacting. Then put a chump back in the spot. Simply real, you try to flex and get stopped.
But I once went on a date who brought a bottle of wine and two champagne glasses.
That's kind of sexy, cinema. Actually. Did she tell you ahead of time that she was doing that?
She did not tell me ahead of time. She surprised me. I don't know if this detracts from the sexiness, but she brought the wine bottle and the champagne glasses out of a Tesco bag. For my American, for my American listeners, What is the American equivalent? Jewel?
That's probably, no, that's like an Audi. That's like an Audi bag.
And it wasn't, one that she just purchased. It wasn't a fresh purchase. It was, that was a bag that had been in the closet and folded up and had a couple of holes in it.
Yeah, that might be a Walgreens bag. So yeah, that does detract from the sexiness, dog.